1-800-449-8686.
Remember when I mentioned this game, Hendroids, to you guys last hour? I'm going to play it on the air right now. This is the music you hear right when you hit play. Now we'll hit play. And when you hear Bobby Dooley go, mm-hmm, that means I've destroyed one of the asteroids. When you hear, ah, God, my ass, that means that my spaceship has been destroyed. So I'm going to play this. This is on the PhilHenryShow.com website. You can log on right now. It's a wonderful stress reliever, a great relaxer. Play some Hendroids. It's really funny. It's fun. It's funny. It's funny fun. Fun funny. Here we go. All right, now my asteroid is out there in space.
Uh-huh.
There, I just destroyed one asteroid. Here comes another one. I'm positioning my rocket ship.
Uh-huh.
There. That's me. I'm firing my retros. Now I'm going to...
Uh-huh.
I got another one. Beautiful. Here's another one.
Uh-huh.
Okay, cool. Now I'm just firing my retros, and I'm positioning...
Uh-huh.
Got another one. Man, I'm batting 1,000 here. Here comes a couple. Well, there's two of them together. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Got it. I'm now at 300. My high score is 5,600. Uh-huh. Mike says he's had 6,000, which... Oh, wait a minute. Here comes the Citizens Auxiliary Police.
God! Oh, my ass!
See, I just got shot out of the sky by the Citizens Auxiliary Police. So I have to reset. And...
Uh-huh.
Got it. Oh, now I'm going to get the Citizens Auxiliary Police. There it is.
When you look at it, what do you see? You see a great man, don't you?
See, oh, my God.
That's what happens when you destroy the Citizens
uh-huh.
Auxiliary Police.
Uh-huh.
Oh, there's another Citizens Auxiliary Police one.
Can you imagine what it's like when I walk into a Popeye's Fried Chicken and I say, I'd like a bucket, 8 pieces, please? I can't keep my food down
for
the puke.
Oh, my God, I can't uh-huh. do just one thing. There it is. There goes another one.
La, 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 la.
It just fired a la-la bomb at me.
And I have neighbors, and I have a stand in the community. I want them to know that I'm not a pervert.
Oh, shoot. What did I... Hey, what happened? No. Hey, I got to close this.
La, 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 la.
I'm going to get... Yeah.
God! Oh, my ass!
Anyway, okay, that's that. That's play Hendroids. It's really fun. I can't close this window here, Mike. I just did it. That's fine. That's fine. We're good. We're good. So that's just a little taste of the idiocy that you can find there. Okay, our number is 1-800-449-8686. Today, I wanted to tell you something that that I did today. Today, I went down to Paramount Studios on Melrose in Hollywood to do a voice in a TV show. I was going to play the voice of a kangaroo, if you must know. And I'm not saying that because it was cool to go to the studio. What was interesting, as I pulled into the lot, I pulled at the main gate there at Paramount, and they have all this security. And I'm driving this beat-up piece of crap truck. And there I am pulling in, and he says, what, are you here to deliver something? No, I'm actually one of the actors. Uh-huh. Okay, step out of the car. No, he didn't tell me to do that, but they're going around my car with those mirrors that they stick under, and they're looking under the hood. The security at this... at Paramount, and I'm sure at all the studios, has really stepped up a lot. So I got in, and I did the thing, and then I was sitting around talking to some of the people who work on the show. And somebody made the point, it was a very good point, because as I was driving to work, I was thinking that the country, Americans, are living in a lot of fear, and they're afraid of terrorism, and they're afraid of anthrax, and they're afraid of airplanes, and they're afraid to travel, and they're afraid to do a lot of stuff. And the president has said, go back to your normal life, but be alert and don't be afraid. And, you know, with all due respect to the president, it doesn't go far enough. We are now over a month into this. We have grieved, and we'll never stop grieving for what happened to those people. But we have gone through the initial shock of what happened. And we've been told repeatedly over and over, don't be afraid, go out and travel. And something hasn't happened that has to happen in order for us to overcome and to actually win this war. And that is, we have to embrace this war. We have to rush headlong into it, wrap our arms around it, and begin to live in this war. We've got to become a part of it. We've got to be on every level warriors. You think it's corny? You think I'm kidding around? Well, you keep living scared, and as things get a little bit more challenging, you won't know where to turn or what to do. Because here's the thing that the president really should say to us, and he's saying a lot of great things. You guys, me, we all have to now start to get pissed. Oh, now what would that do, Phil? Well, let me tell you what it would do. It'll focus our minds and our energies in the right direction. We can't all be warriors. We can't all join the Marines. We can't all be in the Army. But we can do what the Buddhists have said you should do. Go into each day with the face of a lion. That's a little bit of old Buddhist stuff I'm laying on you. You must go into each day with the face of a lion. What does that mean? It means you stop looking over your shoulder, and you stop running outside holding an umbrella over your head, and you stop avoiding, and you start challenging, and you start becoming a part of the experience. We're still avoiding it. We still don't want to believe it happened. We still want to go back to when it was everything was nice before it happened. We still want to pretend like this just never happened. We still want to pretend like maybe tomorrow bin Laden will throw his hands up in the air, walk out of the cave, say he's sorry, and all of the Muslims will realize they were wrong, and America will survive and we'll move on and we'll all have a beach party. And we still want to kind of live in that fantasy world. The better place to be and the better world to live in is in the real world, the world of the here and now. And what that means is we have to now make this war part of our experience, embrace it, love it, live in it, be a warrior, get pissed off, and begin to strike fear into the people that have struck fear into you. Now, we can drop a whole lot of bombs on the Taliban, and which we're doing, and we're knocking hell out of them, and we're dropping all kinds of whatever the hell that thing, what was the thing called? A bunker bust, whatever the hell. We're dropping bombs on these cats, and what do they respond with? Bring it. That's what they're responding with. We'll die first. Now, I'm not saying be crazy, but there is a germ of reality, there is a germ of survival truth in the way that at least the media is portraying the people of Afghanistan, or to specifically the Taliban fighters, in the way that they're responding to this. And we have to be the same way. Not irrationally running off half-cocked, blowing up every building and every mountain and every guy with a bedsheet in sight. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about resolve. I'm talking about rock-hard, steel, throbbing, well, throw out the throbbing part, resolve. That means if they drop anthrax on us, if they fly planes into buildings, we look at them in the eye and we say, bring it, baby. Now, does it sound like a movie? No, it's not a movie. I'm looking around today. This is October, whatever the hell it is, the 11th, the 12th. No, it's very real, what we're living in. It's very real. No, I'm talking about real life now. I'm talking about going into the day, going into the world every day with the face of a lion. I'm talking about going into the world now a little bit pissed off and a little bit more determined that we won't die, that they're not going to kill us, that they can never kill us, that they can do anything they want to us, but they're not going to destroy us. Now, it's easier said than done, I understand, but the first step is in making the decision. That's the very first step, simply making the decision. I've had enough of this crap. I've had enough of the fear. I've had enough of the terror. And you know what? Bring it, man. Because we're ready. We're here. We're not just a bunch of soft asses sitting and looking at our widescreen TVs like you think we are. We're not just a bunch of overly pampered, late century, never had to work an honest day in our life kind of soft-ass Americans like you think we are. We're not a bunch of just disco-loving, damn rap music-loving, hating our country kind of, you know, freak show people. We believe in survival, too. And we believe in our country, too. Now, maybe one of the reasons why this hasn't come bubbling to the surface yet is that people are still sort of looking around and trying to find their center. And maybe they they don't really believe themselves when they hear themselves say, I love my country, I'll do anything for my country, I'll fight for this society that I live in, I'll fight for our culture, I'll fight for our home. Maybe they don't quite believe the words as they come out of their own mouths. But you know what? You can just start saying the words. Even that's a first step. Talk to yourself. Give yourself a pep talk. But one thing's for sure, we have got to now begin to move out of the I'm petrified, I don't want to fly, I don't want to go anything phase, and now we have to move into the now you pissed me off phase. Now you pissed us off. That New York thing, that was bad, and the Washington thing, now you're pissing us off. Now that means that if you're a soldier, you're a soldier. If you're a businessman, you're a businessman. But you go into the world with the attitude that you will not be defeated. It starts with you, spreads out to your family, moves out into your neighborhood, moves out from there into your town, and from there it moves out into the state and the county and the country, and it becomes a real thing. I mean, it becomes a real energy. And I'm not talking about some hippie freaking astrology new age bullcrap. I'm talking about giving yourself a fighting chance by finally getting pissed. You know, remember Howard Beale and Network? I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore. You got to get to that point. You got to get to that point where you're as mad as hell and you're not going to take it anymore. You got to get your feet on the ground. You got to start believing in today and believing in this place that you live. You got to start getting into the world a little bit. It's real. It's here. It's a war. And it's one that we can win. And it's also one that we can lose. Because I don't believe that just running around and waving flags is enough. I don't believe that for a minute. I think it's a nice start. I think it's a beautiful start. But what is necessary here is now to become a warrior on whatever level it is that you live, wherever you are and whatever walk of life. Otherwise, yeah, we can lose this country. We can lose this society. And then where are you going to be? Then what are we going to have then? Anybody got anything better? Anybody got anything better they can suggest? These cats in the Middle East seem to think this Islamic Republic route is the way to go. What do you think, ladies? That's their idea. What we got over here sucks. Their idea is to have this kind of Islamic Republic trip where you don't go out of the house, and I don't know what the hell I'd be doing. I guess I'd be sitting here leading the evening prayers on a microphone someplace. You know, I don't know, man. It doesn't sound like any world for me. It doesn't sound like my kind of life. But that's their idea for us. Now, you got to start to get pissed off, and you got to start to take on that warrior mode, and you have to begin to fight back. And this country has not yet done that on that psychological level that we need to do it on. We got plenty of great soldiers. We got a lot of great sailors. We got a lot of great Marines and flyers, and those guys are overdoing the job. But back here, man, if they haven't got the right mindset, the right mentality back here, those guys are not supported at all. So get pissed off. And I'll meet you all back here in just a few minutes, okay? Thank you. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
And now, Phil Hendry.
So have you played Handroids yet? You have? You said you got a 6,000 on that? I got a 5,400. And before you leave, I'm going to break your record, Mike. Okay, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Letter in Reno tests positive for anthrax in early tests. Was that the one to Microsoft, the Nevada Microsoft offices? Did you hear about that? Don't you think that, I'm only asking my producer, he doesn't know, he's answering the phone. Don't you think that all of these areas, whether it be Microsoft, whether it be the New York Times, whether it be NBC, I don't know anything about the New York Times, by the way, but NBC, doesn't that sound like some kind of a domestic kook thing as opposed to international terrorism? Or are my instincts just completely off base? My instincts are off base? Okay, thank you. Here is Michelle on the Phil Henry Show. Hello, Michelle.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a question about something you just said about the Americans getting pissed off.
Yes.
I completely agree that we all need to strap on a set, and the way you put it was absolutely correct. But now I need to know how you think we should do that and how you think it will benefit the Americans.
Focus your energy away from fear. Focus your energy away from fear. Let me ask you a question. Are you a mother?
Yes.
You are?
Oh, am I a mother?
Are you a mother?
No. Of my dog, but that's all.
Can you imagine yourself being a mother for a moment?
Yes.
And somebody is screwing with your kid?
Yes.
How would you feel then?
Extremely pissed off.
Oh, really? And at that moment, would you be hell-bent on destroying whoever it was that was going to mess with your kid?
Absolutely.
That's what I'm talking about.
Now,
you wouldn't be running off. You wouldn't be running off doing crazy things, would you? Would you be endangering the life of your child while you did that?
No.
Would you be endangering your own life? Well, maybe. But the point is, you would be taking a concerted tack in defending something very precious to you. That's what I'm talking about. Now, if it's not a direct threat to a kid, maybe it's just a matter each day where you put the jacket on the little kid and you make sure he's got his mufflers on and you take care of him that way, or you feed him good food, or you make sure he does his homework. But each day you have a focus that is off of yourself and on something that you really care about. And you don't live in fear, you live in the determined knowledge that that being your child, is going to survive. And that's what I'm talking about. Right now, America and its people, having lived so long in this sort of self-absorbed culture, is trying to find its bearings. And I'm saying that the way to find the bearings now is to redirect the energy from the fear to a determination about your world and about your country and about who you are and what you stand to lose.
I absolutely agree with that 100%.
Thank you.
So now with
But it didn't explain a thing, did it?
No, it did.
Oh, okay.
It did. It was a great perspective. I'm just trying to understand how we can get away with a fear when they're coming out with, be careful when you open your mail, look
for
powder.
Be careful. We're careful. Are you careful when you cross the street?
Well, yeah.
Are you careful when you're driving your car?
But this is kind of different than
I think driving 4,000 pounds of Detroit iron is pretty deadly, too, if you're not careful.
Well, I agree.
Are you living in fear behind the wheel of your car?
All the time now.
You're now in fear?
Yes.
Before September 11th?
No.
Well, you could still die in your car.
Well, I know, but it now makes me think that...
Now makes you think what? When you were driving your car last year, you were in an automobile that could kill you. Could kill you. And the
but
other drivers could kill. Just forget about what you're
aware of things like that.
Forget about whether you're more aware of it. I'm asking you a question having to do with your old life, which is driving an automobile, and you could have died in that thing. But you drive carefully. You observe certain traffic laws. You watch out for the idiots around you. You make sure you don't drive too fast. You make sure you don't drive too slow. You're not living in fear, but you have a determination that you are going to control the situation, i.e., your car. And the potential for death. I'm talking about that now. I'm talking about living with a determination and an awareness that you will survive, that you're going to help your country and your society survive. But it doesn't have to be stark bedwetting fear any more than stark bedwetting fear helps you survive behind the wheel of a car.
That makes sense.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is the difference between living in fear and letting the fear control you, and living in fear and saying, okay, thank you, fear, but I'm now going to control the situation. In other words, you may be afraid, but you are now in control of that emotion and in control of those actions that lead you away from it, as opposed to letting the fear dictate everything that you do.
That just makes perfect sense, and that's putting on a strap and
strapping on a set. You wouldn't mind you being a girl, you wouldn't mind strapping on a set, would you?
Absolutely not.
Tell you what, I'll put on a pair of breasts if you'll strap on it. Well, never mind. did you ever see that Twilight Zone where the two people? Do you know Twilight Zone?
Yeah, a long time ago.
I'll tell you the episode after the news.
Okay,
but listen, it's really cool. Okay, Michelle.
Okay,
thanks. Bye. You guys ever see the Twilight Zone episode with William Shatner where he and his wife, they're newlyweds, and they go to the diner and they put the penny into the little devil machine, and the devil machine starts spitting out answers to their questions that are too, it's too eerily like where they're going, and they become obsessed, and they almost become slaves to this devil machine until they say, you know what, screw you, devil machine, we're leaving. And as the episode concludes, another couple comes in and asks the thing, is it all right to ask you a question? And they've become slaves to it. Well, the little devil machine is like fear. It's like, you know, never mind. Phil Hendry Show.
And now, Phil Hendry.
I always go to World War II as a comparison. I think it's a great comparison. I think it's fantastic. Because it's the last really righteous war. And by that, I mean it's the last war this country was involved in that one could clearly look at and say it was a definite battle against very evil things that were afoot in the world. And if you can imagine, because I'm a big fan of history, if you can imagine walking into a diner and it's 1942 and you take your hat off and you hang it up and you walk over to the counter and you order a cup of coffee and maybe you're going to get breakfast and you've got a newspaper and you open up the paper and in that newspaper are stories of military defeats, United States Marines, United States Army, Japanese overrunning us here, Germans have got us on the run there, we've just come out of a depression. And you think the world is coming to an end. You think that your country, that's it. America's had it. And you got a decision to make. And I'm sure at that time, anybody walking into that diner and getting that cup of coffee and reading that newspaper probably made a variety of decisions on that morning in 1942, early in the war, when America was on the ropes. Maybe they decided to join the military. Maybe they decided to join one of the various government projects that were afoot. You realize that artists were hired by the government in World War II, artists to create works of art. Everybody was involved on some level. There was a program for painters and sculptors to create works of art for government buildings and public parks and things. No matter who you were or what you did, you could be involved on some level in the war effort. If you couldn't join the Army or the Marines, you could do some other kind of defense-related project if you were a father or a husband. But what happened, and through it all, there were blackouts, there was rationing of gasoline and rationing of women's nylons, rubber. I mean, there was deprivation. There was deprivation. There was bad news. There was a two-front war going on. This was a country under some serious assault. And what happened was the people then rose to the occasion. Maybe it was because they'd just been through about 8-9 years of a devastating depression and thought they had nothing left to lose. Maybe that was it. Maybe they just said, Jesus, you know, that freaking depression didn't kill me, man. I guess, you know what, I'm sick of this crap. I'll join the Army. Whatever. Beats the hell out of sitting there on a food line someplace. Maybe that was it. Maybe they were already tough. I don't know. But I'd like to think this is a different time. It is a different era. It's a different day. But I would like to think that we rise to the occasion in much the same way, although maybe it's certainly under different circumstances. But whether you want it or not, whether you like it or not, and whether you want to believe it or not, this is our challenge. This is our war. And this war is every bit as righteous as the one that we were involved in the 40s. Every bit as righteous. And this is every bit as evil, this bin Laden, Islamic fundamentalist, holy war, jihad, worldwide revolution. It's just as threatening as when Hitler said, you know what, once we're done with Europe, we're going to take North America. These guys want a worldwide revolution. No different. and they don't dig the way we live our lives. So whether you want it or not, you got it. It's fallen right into your lap, and you might as well respond a little proactively and say, all right, let's go. Let's get it on. Let's do it. I don't know what tomorrow may bring, but today, this is the kind of person that I choose to be. This is the kind of decision that I'm going to make to press forward with my life and quit being manipulated by every little news story. Now, when's Anthrax coming into town? Because I really want to... I'm kidding. Although, are they going to be visiting L.A.? It's with Judas Priest, right? Mike says he doesn't care about Anthrax. You just want to see Judas Priest? Aren't you sweet? Okay, 1-800-449-8686. Steve, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil, hi. I had a question for you. Did you want to... were you saying that you would like to injure or hurt these people in the country that are just Muslims?
No, I never said that.
You never said anything like that?
No.
That sounded like what you were saying, Phil.
Well, you know what? You got to listen a little easier and take it easy and listen a little harder, I think is what I mean.
Well, Phil, I don't appreciate that.
Appreciate what?
What you've been saying is that you're very biased towards the people that are in our country that are Arabs.
No, I haven't.
Nothing
no,
to do with them.
No, I haven't. You're just stupid. You're just stupid, Steve. That's all. No, I haven't said anything like that. You just heard it wrong because you're dumb. Okay? We're glad to help you. Here is Mark on the Phil Hendry Show. Mark?
Hello, Phil.
How are you doing?
Good. Hey, I'm a businessman. I travel half the country. I'm a sales manager, and I literally have ocean to ocean. I average about 4 flights a week. And
good for you.
The idea that air travelers who travel frequently are afraid of the terrorism is, in most cases, completely wrong. What the air travelers that travel frequently are concerned of, about, and the reason they're not traveling as much, is the crazy security we have. A friend of mine and I were traveling to the same meeting Friday. He missed his flight because he was only to the area or to the airport 2 hours in advance. And he missed his flight because he was only there 2 hours before the flight.
Well, you know, if you're calling me up wanting sympathy, you ain't going to get it.
Hey, I don't want
your
sympathy.
Ass to the airport earlier,
hey, Phil,
okay?
Listen up for just a second.
Yeah, I'm listening. You said
I'm out there
2 hours.
Traveling.
Good
I'm
for
out
you.
There traveling.
Good for you. Congratulations.
People are saying we need to get the
country
going.
You know, I've flown before
again.
Too, Mark. You know, I've actually been on an airplane. In fact, I've flown internationally. I've done everything that you're doing, okay?
No,
so go ahead. You going to tell me how
listening.
It is?
Okay, let me tell you why the security makes no sense.
Go ahead.
You can be sitting on a flight. Hostesses are going in and out carrying drinks to the pilots. That door opens all the time today on any flight. The idea that our security is dramatically enhanced is baloney. What they have done is...
Are you a security expert? I just wanted to know. Are you a security expert of some kind?
I'm enough to know if that door's open.
Well, you know, they haven't reinforced the doors yet. They haven't reinforced the doors yet, Mark, so they're going to have to get around to that, you know, in their time, not yours. That's number one. Number two, what they can do is try to keep a better eye on what people are bringing on airplanes, make sure nobody's pulling into the airport with a bomb in their car, and generally try to discourage by way of putting uniformed people in terminals, anybody thinking they might want to perform some untoward act. Now, they're not doing it up to your schedule, but they are attempting to reinforce air travel in America. They spent less than $1 billion on it when they were budgeting for this sort of thing. $8 billion, by the way, on bioterrorism. Now,
well,
I don't know what it is you're
security,
saying, other than the fact that if your friend didn't get to the airport early enough, then he ought to get a new alarm
Listen
clock
up.
Or something.
Listen up. If you're traveling like a 3-hour distance by car, and you could instead of that take a 1-hour flight, it no longer makes sense to take that flight. And if you get to the airport any time to travel, you'll be asked for a driver's license over and over again.
You know, you haven't done much traveling internationally.
Let me finish my point.
You haven't done much traveling internationally. That happens to you in airports.
Oh, yes, I have.
Really?
I've traveled all over the world.
You have, huh? Well, then, if you've been anywhere in Europe, you know that happens to you all the time in Europe. All the time. At every major airport in Europe, they're asked for ID, you're finding this and finding
that.
Now, my question that I have for you, Mark, is this. Would you rather drive your car to where you have to be?
It depends on the distance, considering
okay, well, then why don't you drive your car?
Let me tell you what's wrong with the security.
You haven't done it in 5 minutes here, man. You're sitting here talking to me about, you know, about the doors were open.
Then listen up for just a second.
I've been listening. I'm waiting.
License. They make you show driver's license over and over and over and over.
What a hassle. You poor guy.
It has nothing to do with security.
Hey, you, how do you know? How do you know?
Anyway.
How do you know?
Every one of those people had IDs. They had to show driver's licenses before the World Trade Center.
Okay, great, yeah. You know now what? You ever heard of a term called deterring? You ever heard of a thing called deterring?
Of security.
You ever heard of a thing called deterrence? Do you know why cops wear uniforms?
If you think that's
do you know why cops? You know what, Mark? I'll tell you something. I have my opinion, and you have yours. What your opinion is springing from is the fact that you're being inconvenienced. You don't know whether there's more security, less. I don't think you even give a crap. You just don't want to be inconvenienced. You don't want to have to get to the airport. Well, then what are you talking about?
You're wrong.
Tell us what we can do. Then give us some ideas. Then, if you're concerned about security, if you're concerned about security, oh, your freedom.
Yeah,
you know what? Your freedom, pal, is on the bottom of the list today. You got that?
You're gonna have to
suck on that for a while, Mark, because your freedom right now, and by the way, this freedom you're talking about is the real hassle, the draconian, the Stalinist, the Hitlerian method of having to show your driver's license over and over and over again. Man, that's a concentration camp you're living in there.
Tell me how that helps. If that's worth,
it hurts. Let me ask you something. Give me a better idea then.
Tell me how it helps.
Give me a better idea. Why don't you tell me what great steps you'd implement were you in charge of security?
I live next door to a pilot for Continental. What I would do and what he would do, I agree with. Lock that door, make that door so it's impenetrable, close it before.
Well, they
the
can't do that overnight,
off,
can they?
And arm the pilot and the co-pilot.
They can't do that overnight, can they? They got to refit.
Yes, they can do that overnight.
They can't refit the doors overnight.
Really?
How do they do that? How do they refit the doors overnight? How do they do that?
Every Israeli plane has had those on them for at least 10 years.
How do you refit them overnight? Hey, Mark, how do you refit those? How do you refit those doors overnight, Mark?
You go in and put them on.
Go out there to True Value Hardware and get some of those new doors, huh?
It's not a new door. It's a lining kit made of steel.
It's a lining kit made of steel that can be done overnight on thousands of aircraft.
Yeah.
Really? According to a pilot on Continental Airlines, which is going out of business. Because maybe their pilots are dumb, too. This guy is living in an absolute Stalinist regime. Because he's got to show his driver's license over and over and over again. And then overnight tomorrow, we'll go down to Home Depot and get those new airline door refitting kits. Now, why does he want to do all of that? Because they're going in and out of there. And they're giving him food and all that crap. You want to know why? Because he doesn't have an alarm clock. Get your ass out of bed, buy an alarm clock, get there 3 hours earlier if you have to, and you know what? Suck it up. Man, this is not the time to be calling me up with how you're being inconvenienced. You got 6,000 people got inconvenienced. We don't even know where they are, man. We can't find all the body parts. We can't even identify them. It'll be years before we even be able to put names to hands, to legs, to feet, to eyes. But I got a guy here who flies all the time, and maybe he just isn't going to fly anymore. He's going to drive. Well, then drive, Charlie. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
This is the Phil Hendry Show.
Look, I'm going to give that guy the benefit of the doubt, the gentleman that I spoke with before. Let's put those doors on. He says that we need to put those refitted, retrofitted doors to the cockpit. Let's go ahead and do that. Let's get, I don't know how many thousands of people to refit those doors, because if he wants to do it overnight, and he said he can do it overnight, that's like 8 hours is an overnight job. Let's say that the domestic fleet, I don't know, the fleet of United States airliners is somewhere in the neighborhood of what, 1,000? Is that too conservative? I don't know. But I'm willing to bet there's about 1,000 airplanes that exist that we need to refit those doors on. So maybe it takes two guys to put those doors on. So there's 2,000 guys, 8 hours. So you have to mobilize a freaking division of airline mechanic type guys to go in and refit these doors over an 8-hour period and get the doors and do it in, I would guess, some centralized location, or are we supposed to just send them out all over the country to put the doors on real fast? And how is that any better than just having an air marshal up there with a gun? Now, right now, the gentleman flies and says that he sees those stewardesses going in and out of the cockpit of these airliners. Does he know where the air marshal is on that plane? Probably not. They're flying right now. Am I right about that? And you know who they are? Probably the guy sitting in the emergency row. Anyway, 1-800-449-8686. Here is Tucker on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hey, how are you, Phil?
Good.
I'm pissed, baby.
Huh?
I remember my school days. I used to be bully, and the only way to get that away from me is when I got pissed with these guys. They were trying to mess with me, and it wasn't until I got pissed and I stepped up to them, and they left me alone. We got to do the same thing. We got to live our own lives. And, you know, leave her own way.
Hey, that lady that was on, and she was talking about how she'd be around one of her kids. If one of her kids was threatened, you got to feel that way about your country. You know, I mean, it's the same thing. Your kid gets endangered, and it's a no-brainer for most women to say, sure, I'd rip to shreds anybody that tried to mess with my kids. Well, why wouldn't you feel the same way about your own country?
This is the choices that we got. Either live in fear or run away. What are we going to run away? How are we going to do that? Negative.
We can go to Mexico.
We're going to step up to the plate, and we're going to respect everybody. But if anybody is going to mess up with us, we're going to
pay
back.
We could run away to Cabo. All right, man, thanks.
All right, no
problem.
Bye.
Here is Scott on the Phil Hendry Show. Scott?
They got a two-for-one special. I just got out of Lowe's, Phil, and they got a two-for-one special on those doors, so get down there.
You can go down there and get those doors,
I just got back from the Kansas City airport, and, you know, there's a lot of people out. I'm a national sales manager, too, and I'm going across the country. And you know what? I'm just sick and tired of these people at the airport that are bitching because they have to get there an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours. And I just want to say what they're doing is the right thing. I feel safe. I wish they do a little bit more. Some of the guys there that are checking bags don't look like they're very proficient at it, and they know what they're doing. But
yeah,
we're doing what we can do.
They're thinking about federalizing those guys, aren't they, bag-checking guys?
Yeah, I think they are, and they probably need to, because some of these guys, I'm not sure, you know, if they got out of high school, quite honestly. But, hey, I just want to give you kudos for ripping these people that call up, because it's a joke. And if they don't want to live here, if they got to wait 2 or 3 hours and go through all this and show all this, identification, then the hell with them.
It's not that they don't want to live here. I mean, I don't mean to say that the guy hasn't got a right to live in America. Of course he does, and he's a hardworking salesman like you are. But the fact of the matter remains, this ain't the time to be stepping up and telling us what you need. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm being inconvenienced. Hey, you know what, Charlie? Here's a quarter. Go call somebody that really wants to talk to you about that, because I don't.
Exactly.
This is not the time. If you got to get to the airport earlier, and as we smooth this process out, we just got 6,000 people butchered up in an attack in New York and in Washington.
And they forget about that so easily.
Oh, my God.
They forget about human lives because they're a little inconvenienced. It's pathetic. It is absolutely pathetic, and it makes me mad. I'm a little nervous, so I got to get off the. I got to get off the phone. I'm a little nervous to be on the phone with you.
Go have a beer. All right, man. Thanks. Bye. He's a little nervous. He might come through the phone, but I can understand that. Hey, am I wrong about this? Go tell it to somebody else. This is not the time. You know, we're so used to it too. Americans, hey, I don't like this, I don't like that, I got to complain about this, I got to complain about that, it's inconvenience, there's got to be a better way. Oh, really? What way is that? Well, I don't know, I haven't thought of it, but there's got to be a better way. Well, you know, this is the only way we have right now. Well, yeah, I don't like it because it's this, that, and something else. And I'm a salesman, and I got to travel. I know you're a salesman, I know you got to travel. I work with salesmen here. I see these guys going back and forth. The man that I work for is all over the country these days. Down talking to Rush in Miami, and then he's out here calming me down, then he's got to go back to New York. Poor guy hasn't seen his kids in 3 weeks. How you doing, Craig? By the way, I got to talk to you about my raise. It's the Phil Hendry Show.